Hello, this is Hugh Baird, and I'm your moderator. I'm here with State Senator Jay Costa, and we want to welcome you to this live telephone town hall. If you have a question for Senator Costa this evening, you can ask it at any time by pressing star on your phone's keypad. Later now, we'll be asking your opinion on a live poll question. Now let's welcome Senator Jay Costa.
Thank you very much, Hugh, and thank you to all the residents participating in tonight's call. As over the years, what I've learned is some of the best feedback and ideas that I receive come directly from constituents, whether it be in the form of a community town hall meeting or now we're trying to do some live telephone town halls to give folks an opportunity to discuss issues that are important in our community and also to answer questions that you might have about state government or other local issues that are taking place or resonating here in Western Pennsylvania. This format will allow you to listen to conversation, offer your opinion, and even ask questions from the comfort of your home. And if you'd like to ask a question anytime during this conversation, it's important that you press star 3 on your telephone.
Thank you, Jay. For those of us just joining us here with Senator Costa, we're discussing key issues and current issues that are important to you. While we take a few minutes to allow everyone to join the call, Senator Costa, can you give us a little bit on your background and talk about some of the key issues that you'd like to focus on this session?
Yeah, thanks, Hugh, very much so. Senate Democrats are very much interested in looking at some of the key issues around making certain that we continue to make investments in education. We're now in the middle of June, nearly in the middle of June, and we're beginning our conversation about how we fund the general appropriation budget. So our budget conversations are very much taking a good bit of time here, as well as a number of policy issues centered around that. We believe that it's critically important that we continue to work to make investments in education, but also look to make sure we shore up a number of the holes that have been established through budget cuts over the past several years, not only in education, as I mentioned, but also in social safety net programs. We made a lot of modifications there, changes there that have been harmful to families and people who need the support, the social safety net that's really, really important. And it's really impacted on our counties as well. We also believe that the conversation needs to be about jobs, how we grow jobs and create jobs in this Commonwealth. Unfortunately, the Commonwealth of Pennsylvania over the past several years, the past 3 years, has gone from 7th in the country in job creation to just this month we learned that we are now 49th in the country in growing jobs. We need to reverse that. It's obvious. And we need to begin to figure out a way in which we make investments along those lines. We think that's what's important. Right now, we're faced with a $1.2 billion shortfall in our budget for next year from the governor's proposed budget of roughly $29.4 billion. So we have to figure out a way to generate revenue along those lines to allow us to make those investments that I referenced. One of the things that we've looked at that helps us reduce spending, which I think needs to be a critical component of this conversation, reducing spending, relates to implementing something called the Medicaid Expansion Program here in Pennsylvania. We believe that that's the appropriate place for us to start. And when we start there, we do a number of things. First and foremost, we reduce the expenditures of the Commonwealth by an excess of an additional $250 million over and above what the governor has talked about. So that's our first cut for savings, I should say, a reduction in spending of $250 million. By doing a Medicaid expansion into a proven network of managed care organizations across Pennsylvania, we do a number of things. We grow jobs. We grow 35,000 jobs across the Commonwealth. Specifically, I think, in the western part of the state, in the Pittsburgh region, Allegheny County, we stand to benefit tremendously because those are jobs, in my view, that are going to be in the healthcare delivery system and systems across the region. And that's right in the sweet spot for Pittsburgh and Allegheny County. So we think that's one of the reasons why. The second reason, obviously, is that the federal government will provide those resources to offset our state spending, which I mentioned earlier. Third, we have the opportunity to provide a minimal level of health care for some 500,000 working men and women. And again, it's important to note that these are working men and women, folks who we encounter every single day of the week, whether we go get a coffee at a coffee shop or whether we're going to a grocery store or wherever we may run into somebody who makes a decent wage or low-income wage around 138% of poverty, but does not offer health care. This provides a minimal level of health care that at the end of the day reduces costs associated to everybody else that does have health care coverage as it relates to their premium costs. So those are some of the reasons why we think Medicaid expansion is a good start. The other way in which we address raising revenue relates to the extraction tax. Senate Democrats and I believe that we need to have a very serious conversation this month about increasing or providing for an extraction extraction tax of about 5%. Pennsylvania does not have one. We have an impact fee, which likely will stay in place, but we need to layer on top of that a 5% extraction tax to make certain that the Marcellus industry that is removing some of our natural resources from our under our feet are paying the appropriate rate as it relates to how we fund government. We believe that those dollars should be earmarked and dedicated to education, but also into the environment and environmental programs. Specifically, we think enhancing and supporting the enforcement side of DEP and allowing them and making certain that they provide the adequate level of oversight and enforcement along those lines, as well as programs that are going to work to remediate a number of our waters and streams and things of that nature. So we've got a lot of activity going on along those lines. But more importantly, I'm happy to hear some of the questions that the callers may have at this point, Hugh.
Okay. Thank you, Senator Acosta. Just to remind all those who have joined us, if you'd like to ask Senator Acosta a question, please press *3 on your keypad. Senator, we have a number of folks who are interested in asking you a question. And so what we'll do right now is we'll go to the callers. We're going to go to Patricia and Whitaker. Patricia, you're live with Senator Acosta. Go ahead, Patricia.
One thing I just want him to know, I'm a fan of his because I've followed Acosta the whole time he's been representing Pennsylvania. And I'm very impressed with his work. You're welcome. And also my daughter went to college with Joey Acosta also.
Oh, okay. Yeah, my nephew Joey.
Your nephew Joey, yes. And
Joey G.
She's very polite. Mm-hmm. My daughter Melissa went there. No, my son Jason is currently going to be a sophomore at Pitt Johnstown in the fall. And Pitt Johnstown's, I guess they're waiting or they're working on financial aid packages for all the students. And I guess they're waiting on the state budget. And
correct.
There's a couple factors that FIA, what I hear is FIA grant was supposed to be $2,200 a semester, and then the college goes, oh, no, because the state, their approval, they're only going to give them $1,995 a semester to students, so that's going to lower the state grants by $400 a year. That's a rumor I heard.
Yeah, I'm not certain that that's the case at this point in time. My colleague, Senator Wayne Fontana from Pittsburgh, Allegheny County area, is the vice chairman of FIA. I will converse with him and get an answer for you, and maybe we can give you a call back and let you know what that answer is. But I know that FIA is waiting for an opportunity to find out exactly what we provide to the students. And the state, they're waiting to what the state's going to provide to FIA to assist with respect to those grants. And I can also say to you, typically, be over and above the state grant, FIA typically provides revenue that they also receive through work that they do in the programs that they provide for other states and other folks that supplements what Pennsylvania does. So we will monitor, check into that, and give you a holler back and let you know exactly what the status is, if that's okay.
Thank you, Patricia, for the call. To remind all those callers who have joined us, if you'd like to ask Senator Acosta a question, please press *3 on your keypad. And, Senator, before we turn to the next question, I know that one of the things that you've been involved with is trying to restore education dollars and refocus our education agenda, and you've been heavily involved in the UPMC Highmark issue. Can you talk a little bit about, first of all, the UPMC Highmark issue and some of the activities that you're involved with, and then we can turn to education while we have some other callers join us?
I'm happy to do that, Hugh. I think over the course of the past 2 years, I've been knee-deep involved in the UPMC and Highmark dispute that has taken place, and was worked with my colleague, Senator White, from Indiana County about a year and a half or so ago, and providing for the extension that we currently have with respect to the contract between the two. My personal view is I think that there's got to be a way for these two independent delivery systems to be able to coexist in our region and to allow people to have access to both of these healthcare facilities with a limited number of restrictions and limitations. I've been advocating for legislation along with Senator Randy Volokovich from the North Hills and Representative Dan Franco and Jim Christiani in providing for bipartisan, bicameral legislation that would essentially require these two entities to contract with one another, and if they can't reach an agreement, that there be binding arbitration relative to how they would contract with one another. That legislation is pending before the Senate and the House, respectively, and we're hoping that that moves forward. The second front that we're engaged in is encouraging the governor, which we have done and which I think he's taken steps, to get engaged in this conversation. To the governor's credit, he was involved 2 years or 18 months or so ago and helping to craft a solution to the original crisis that I call crisis, and help foster a solution there. Now it's time for the governor to get back engaged along those lines. And he's done that. And our hope is that he includes the legislature in that conversation as we go forward. The second thing that's being done currently is that, as was reported in the Post-Gazette recently, there are a number of concerns that have been raised. We've raised some a couple years ago that have been reviewed by the Attorney General. And I believe that the Attorney General is now poised or prepared to issue some type of a formal complaint alleging some irregularities relative to the work and the manner in which UPMC has conducted its mission. So that remains to be seen whether or not that makes it to where the general would formally file charges. My hope is that we can get to a place where everybody gets in the room, governor, UPMC, Highmark, the attorney general, legislative leaders, and we don't come out until we have a resolution on that issue, because I think it's critically important that folks in the Pittsburgh and Allegheny and western part of the state have access to the very good facilities at both UPMC but also Allegheny Health Network. There's got to be a way in which we can resolve this situation, and I'm going to continue working towards that end, Hugh.
Thank you, Senator. And again, to remind the callers that have joined us here this evening, if you'd like to ask Senator Costa a question, please press *3 on your keypad. Senator, we're going to go back to the callers. We're going to talk to April in Churchill. April, you're live with Senator Costa. Go ahead.
Thank you for taking my call. Senator Costa, like you, I'm concerned with funding education, and I'm concerned that in Pennsylvania there seems to be an inequity in the way we fund our school systems. Children in more affluent neighborhoods seem to get better school districts as opposed to neighborhoods that are not quite as affluent, because we tend to fund our schools based on property tax. I'm also concerned that senior citizens who've spent a lifetime of working, paying off their mortgages, can't afford to stay in their homes after they retire because the property taxes are so high. What are your thoughts about alternative funding for schools? For example, getting a larger state subsidy for local education to even the playing field between affluent and non-affluent school districts? And I think there should be, all children in the state of Pennsylvania deserve a good public education. What are your thoughts on that?
I agree with you 100%, April, that every child deserves a good quality, high quality education. That's what our Constitution says we should provide, and we need to do that. With respect to funding, I've been a longtime supporter and an advocate for increased funding in education, targeted appropriate dollars. And when we did that in the Rendell years, we made significant investments in education. And I can tell you, we had success in many areas that were measured in different grade levels and different subject matters. Pennsylvania scored well. In fact, at one point, we were the only state in the country, when we made these investments, we were the only state in the country that improved in every grade level that was tested, as well as every subject matter. And so we've been a leader, and we were a leader among states along those lines. More recently, our Republican leadership has chosen, and the governor has chosen to disinvest in education, and I think we're seeing part of the problem resonate with respect to the scores in a lot of our school districts, but more importantly, in the ability of school districts to be able to provide a high-quality education. It's resulted in nearly 70% of our school districts across Pennsylvania increasing their school property taxes at the local level, and that's problematic. I think what we need to do, and I've done it in the past, I supported legislation referred to as the STOP legislation that would have shifted the burden away from property tax over to an income tax or a sales tax increase, as well as looking at the revenue we receive from the gaming revenue. So I think it's time for a conversation about how we do that. There are some drawbacks. There are some issues that have been resonating here with respect to Senate Bill 76 and some of the concerns that folks have about how we begin to charge a sales tax and how we deal with the income tax increase and who's impacted by that, and also some of the loss of some of the federal tax benefits that folks aren't aware of, and also, as I said earlier, the application of the sales tax to many everyday services and items that folks currently purchase that cause concern for a number of organizations and individuals.
Thank you, Senator. To remind all those who have joined us on the line this evening, if you'd like to ask Senator Costa a question, please press *3 on your keypad, and we'll get you on as soon as we possibly can. A little later on, we're going to have a poll question. Poll question is going to be dealing with Medicaid expansion and approach to Medicaid expansion. But right now, Senator, I'd like to go back to the callers.
Mm-hmm.
We're going to bring in Chris from Squirrel Hill. Chris has a question about shale drilling. Go ahead, Chris. You're live with Senator Costa.
Thanks. Hey, Senator Costa. I applaud your energy here. You woke me up from a nap with this call. So I really give you credit. No, I'm glad you did. I give you credit for doing this. This is kind of novel for me. But anyway, you said this. You said Pennsylvania is now 49th in the country in job creation. And yet I've heard for years now about all these jobs being created by the fracking and drilling. So first of all, do you have an estimate of the number of jobs that have been created by shale drilling in the state? And how do you explain this disconnection between the job creation and the supposed boom in jobs from drilling?
I would say that my understanding is that there are jobs that have grown in Pennsylvania directly related to the shale industry. I can't quantify the exact number, but they are in the low 10,000s, I'm told. However, in terms of the growth of jobs along those lines, and they're spread out across the state, certainly in the southwestern part of the state, Washington, Fayette, Greene County, there's a lot of activity. But also when you go into north central Pennsylvania, there's a lot of job growth there. And a lot of labor folks who are working in those areas are working where otherwise they'd be down and they'd be basically not working. The problem is in terms of what's taking place in other industries and other sectors of our economy. That's where the jobs are not, unfortunately, and there's not job growth. The governor talks about how he's grown jobs to the tune of 150,000 individuals who, in terms of new net private jobs. But what he doesn't talk to you about is the fact that we have 40,000 less public sector jobs, particularly 20,000 folks in the education community who are no longer part of that workforce. But we don't have the programs outside of the Marcellus area that are generating the jobs that we need to generate, and that's what's been frustrating. We're not making investments to facilitate and to encourage individuals to want to come here in Pennsylvania and set up shop and grow our economy, and that's what we have to be able to do. And that's what we're going to continue to talk about. You know, one of the areas that did take place recently where there will be some job growth, I believe, is in the area of the transportation funding plan that's going to grow over the course of the next couple of years, some 60-plus thousand jobs. But the large majority of those jobs are already folks who live and work here, and we were going through a dry spell. And finally, with respect to Marcellus, while there have been job growth there, I think at this point in time, my understanding is that job growth and those folks who are drilling wells here has simmered down a little bit, so to speak. They're not quite as active as they once were early on when the industry came into the western part of the state in particular. So that job growth is not as aggressive as it was early on. There are new jobs there, but quite frankly, they're offset by the lack of job creation efforts in other sectors and other industries across Pennsylvania.
Thank you, Chris, for the call, and we again apologize for waking you up, but that was a very good question and a real good answer. Thank you, Senator Costa. Before we move on to our next caller, I'd like to introduce the polling question for those folks who have joined us to get their thoughts on this matter. The poll question is for everybody on the line. As you know, Senator Costa spoke about expanding Medicaid to cover persons who make up to 138% of the federal poverty line. That's under consideration, and there's been considerable pressure. Proponents of the plan say that more than 500,000 Pennsylvanians receive health care, and it will generate $400 million of savings and new revenues. However, the governor said that the Medicaid expansion is too costly and that the expansion of health care should be done through a premium support. So the question for our callers tonight, Senator, is which expansion method do you support? Press 1 if you think we should embrace a Medicaid expansion to cover individuals up to 138% of the federal poverty level. Press 2 if you support Governor Corbett's private sector premium-based approach. And we'll give the folks who are on the line a little bit of time to think about that and consider it, and I'll reintroduce that question. If you have a caller again, to remind the callers today that if you have a question for Senator Costa, please press star 3. And, Senator, what I'd like to do right now is go back to the callers, and we're going to go to Beth in Penn Hills, and Beth has a question about charter schools. Beth, you're live with Senator Costa. Go ahead.
Hi, Senator. I just have a few questions about public education and charter schools. I wanted to know what the plan is regarding public education and how we can direct less of public school money to go towards the charter schools. Seems like the public schools are going broke supporting these for-profit charter schools.
That's a great question. It's a very timely question. Earlier today, we had a very lengthy conversation in our caucus among the Democratic members. Legislation is pending as it relates to charter schools, in particular special education funding. I think we need to make some modifications. I think we have to look at ways to rein in some of those costs and make them be more realistic to the actual services that are being provided, particularly in the cyber school area, but also in the special ed area as well, where we've got some formulas that are not appropriate, in my view, and they need to be addressed. My colleagues, Senator Brown and Senator Dinneman, Democratic Chairman of Education Committee, has been working on some language, and I think we're going to begin a process this week to be able to address that. I'm well aware of the increased cost associated with the school districts are paying along those lines, and we have to continue to work to rein those costs in. And I think you will see that happen in legislation, maybe tomorrow through the Senate, but if not tomorrow, next week. So I think some steps are being taken to adjust that and modify that to help school districts save some of those resources as we go forward.
Beth, thank you very much for the question. To remind the callers that if you'd like to speak with Senator Costa, you can press *3 and ask the senator a question. Senator, right now we're going to go to John in Arlington, and he has a question about funding senior centers. John, go ahead. You're live with Senator Costa.
Senator Costa, this is John Dixon from Arlington. I've talked to you at the Arlington Civic Council meetings, and we had a meeting last year, I believe, with you and talked to you about things. My question is, how are we going to keep our senior centers funded and keep them open?
Well, that's a great question, John, and I know that we have a lot of great senior centers across the county. I know up in the Arlington area and around there, you got El Dorado, and the great work that Steve Hutter and other folks have done have been outstanding, and they really, pull things together to keep the doors open. I think two things have to happen. We need to continue to make investments in our senior programs to our Department of Aging to make certain that happens, but we also have to partner well with our county agencies on aging to make sure that we do maintain those programs that are successful. The third thing I think we need to do a better job of is getting more folks to the centers. I think that has been one of the issues I think that has been problematic for a lot of folks, that the participation in a lot of these centers, sometimes when folks look and study some of the centers, they don't see a lot of folks participating in programs, and it makes it difficult sometimes to justify the investment of resources along those lines. So we have to make a strong case that they certainly serve a wonderful purpose, and I've been there a lot of times. My mother served on the advisory board for some 20-plus years as the chairwoman, so I know firsthand the work that the good people at those centers do. And we've got to maintain them, but we've got to also provide the local governments the resources to allow that to happen, whether it be the city of Pittsburgh or in Allegheny County or some of the municipalities outside the city that have those programs. We've got to make sure we keep those doors open, because at the end of the day, it allows our older Pennsylvanians the opportunity to get out from inside the house, get out and have socialized with individuals, whether it be playing cards or whether it be just socializing, playing bingo. I mean, I went to the Greenfield Senior Center last week and had a great time with some folks there and learned a lot of things that needed to be done. But we have to have participation, and that's a big issue that I think we have to figure out a way to make those centers more accessible, provide more opportunities for folks to get there, make it more convenient for them to get there, because I think they serve a valuable purpose. But we need to provide money there as well, and that's something we need to do at the state level. And that goes back to, as I mentioned earlier, what I'll call the social safety net or the human service programs that in this administration has cut by nearly $100 million, and we've not replaced those dollars. Those are exactly the type of programs that have been cut that we need to go back in and find resources for to be able to restore those programs. And that's what Senate Democrats are talking about. That's what I'm fighting for, and we're going to continue to do that.
John, thank you very much for the call. I'd remind all those who have joined us, if you have a question for Senator Costa, please press *3, and we'll get you on the line as best as we can. Senator, I just want to go through the poll question again and to give a little background to those who are participating. expanding Medicaid to cover persons who make up to 38% of the federal poverty line is currently under consideration, and considerable pressure is being applied to force the governor's hand. Proponents say that more than 500,000 Pennsylvanians will receive health care, and the state will generate $400 million through savings or new revenues. The governor contends that Medicaid expansion is too costly and that help for persons should be handled through a premium support plan, and he asked the federal government to approve a private sector-based approach. So the question for our participants tonight is, which expansion method do you support? Press 1 if you think we should embrace Medicaid expansion to cover individuals up to 138% of the poverty level. Press 2 if you support Governor Corbett's private sector premium support approach. And again, that's a poll question. We'll remind folks, again, going down throughout the call, but if you have a question for Senator Acosta, please press star 3, and we'll see if we can get you on the line. So we're gonna move now to Raymond from Squirrel Hill. Raymond has a question about judges. Go ahead, Raymond. You're on the line with Senator Acosta. Raymond, are you there?
Hello, Raymond.
I guess Raymond dropped off. Senator, we're going to turn to Neil. Now he has a question about fracking and a statewide economic development plan. Neil, you're on live with Senator Acosta. Go ahead.
Hello.
Hi, Neil.
Hi. I used to work with your brother.
Is that right?
Now
which
it's
one?
Benny County.
At the county with Brother Guy?
Yes.
Okay.
In the Economic Development Division.
Yep.
Anyway, which is why I'm asking a question about economic development.
Mm-hmm.
First question, though, deals with fracking. And I'm in favor of fracking, but I also acknowledge that there can be a lot of negative consequences. Is there an effort to develop a comprehensive set of regulations to see that we can have our cake and eat it too, where fracking is concerned?
I believe that there are regulations that are currently going through IRC, which is the Independent Regulatory Review Commission that DEP commissioned, that conversation is taking place at this point in time, and so there are efforts along those lines to, like you said, have our cake and eat it too, and I think that's what we need to try to do. We have to strike the right balance. We have to strike the right balance with respect to the nature of the industry that's going to be here, and it's going to be here to one degree to another. How much they're here remains to be seen, but at the end of the day, they're going to be here. And they're going to be here for a long time because we have different levels of gas beyond Marcellus. As you know, we have Utica, and I think there's a level above that. So they're not going anywhere. The question is to what degree they will be investing here. So I think that we have to strike the right balance with respect to how we impact our environment and the quality of life in Pennsylvania. That's what the regulations need to do. But more importantly, we need to have a strong Department of Environmental Protection that enforces those regulations to make certain that the industry here is here, and what it is that they do and how they do it needs to be a set of standards that the regulations would provide. But you need to make certain that those regulations have some teeth and some enforcement. And that's what, in my view, in some respects has been lacking, because we've not been able to fund DEP to the point where we should be funding it. And that's what we're going to work towards, that end, to make sure we have proper resources, certainly from an extraction tax, that allows us the opportunity to fund those programs properly, provide the appropriate enforcement mechanisms, and provide the appropriate folks available to do the enforcement and support what they find along those lines. But again, the goal is to have a balanced approach to this industry, and I don't know whether or not we're quite there yet, and I think that's what we need to continue to talk about.
Neil, thank you for the call. I appreciate that. The next call we're going to turn to is Homer in Hazelwood, and he has a question about shale and its relationship with education dollars. Homer, go ahead. You're on live with Senator Acosta.
Thank you, Senator, for taking my call. You've already answered part of my question, but I'd like to know if a larger portion of the funds derived from the Marcellus Shale could be allocated to training more people to take these jobs in the Marcellus Shale, for the simple reason that every time there's an accident or something, I hear about workers from Oklahoma, Texas, everywhere but Pennsylvania, and I thought when Marcellus Shale came in, it would provide a larger percentage of jobs for Pennsylvanians.
Thanks, Homer, for the call. How you been, buddy?
Have pretty good, Senator. Pretty good. Thank you.
Yeah, Homer. Ursula, tell I said hello as well.
Yes, she just walked in the house from the Hazelwood Initiative meeting.
Well, those guys do good work, as you know. And so in any event, to answer your question, a couple things. One, we expect if we do a 5% increase in the Marcellus Shale tax layered on top of the existing impact fee, that 5% would likely generate about $720 million. The large portion, well over 40 or so percent, we think needs to be dedicated at a minimum 40% into education. And I think that's important. And we need to dedicate it into programs. And I want to go back to one of the previous callers, Homer, who mentioned that we have to have the appropriate expenditures and equity and with respect to how we spend those dollars. And that's something that's been lacking the last couple of years in terms of how education dollars have been driven out. At the end of the day, the changes that have been made, the cuts that have been made, have disproportionately impacted on our less affluent school districts, the city of Pittsburgh and a number of other school districts in western Pennsylvania. We have to change that process. But with regard to Marcellus and the jobs, I can tell you that when I talk to our friends in labor who are engaged in this industry, primarily folks, whether it be steam fitters, pipe and trades guys and all those folks, laborers and other folks, they tell us that they're working at near capacity with respect to their members. So there are jobs, and the people are working in those areas, those labor industry areas, our labor areas. And but I think when you start talking about the specialty jobs on the rig, that's where you see the out-of-state folks. But the other work that's being done is being done by to a large degree by Pennsylvanians. And we're working to inject in this legislation as we go forward the need to do two things. One, to make sure we continue to hire Pennsylvanians, and two, to make sure that these Marcellus companies, when they purchase their steel for their piping, that they're not purchasing the steel from other countries, but rather they're purchasing that steel from companies like U.S. Steel. We saw what's taking place in McKeesport, how they are mothballing the plant in McKeesport, losing 150-some jobs. Those are the type of things that are directly related to the ability of the industry to purchase steel local from U.S. companies. I've worked with Congressman Doyle, U.S. Senator Casey. We had a rally in Waterfront not too long ago trying to encourage that, and we're going to continue to do that on our end as well as we go forward.
Thank you. Thank you, Homer, for the question. And, Senator, you know, we've covered a lot of territory up to this point, and there's a lot of callers, a lot of interest on the line. To remind callers, if you'd like to ask Senator Costa a question, please press *3, and we'll get you on the line as quickly as we can. We've covered a number of areas from charter schools to shale, and we have James on the line now, but he has a question about the Fisher House. James, you're online with Senator Costa. Go ahead.
Hello, Senator. How have you been?
I'm James. How you doing, buddy?
Good. We met down at your senior citizens event at Building 5, your local 5, and I spoke to you concerning the Fisher House. I think what I'm asking is, in your position, you get to travel around this state, and what we're trying to make the people understand that are outside our 50-mile radius is that it's here for the use if there are veterans coming to the VA in Pittsburgh. Not that I have any problem with people spending money at hotels, but when you're worried about a veteran, the last thing you want to have to worry about is a hotel bill. And
right.
The Fisher House is free of charge, all the way from your room to what you need to wear to what you eat is all on the Friends of the Pittsburgh Fisher House. That's our job, is to make sure you don't want for anything.
Good program. I appreciate you participating in our event. And I encourage folks who don't know about the program to learn more about it. And if they have family members that are veterans and need support, that they reach out and maybe check online to get to your website and support that effort. So thank you very much.
Thank you, James. Senator, we're going to go back to the phone calls. We're going to go to Jim in Squirrel Hill. Jim, you're on with Senator Costa. Go ahead.
Thank you very much. My name is Jim DeLuca. I'm from Squirrel Hill. I'm an economic development consultant. First, Senator, I'd like to say that this forum is a terrific idea, and that if everybody in the legislature had your knowledge and confidence to take unstaged questions from 360 degrees, this would be a better place to live.
Thank you. It's kind of you. We think it's a good program. It's the first one that we've done, and I know that we will be continuing to do them over the course of the over the course of the next several months.
Well, I'll be happy to help you any way I can. Anyway, I have two questions that are a little more technical than some of the questions we've had here so far. My good friend Mike King used to be in charge of a program called Laurel, the Legislative Office for Research Liaisons, and it was one of 11 mini national science foundations that were set up in America, and it was zeroed out relatively recently. I want to know if there's any possibility of not necessarily bringing back Laurel, but bringing back something like Laurel.
Yeah, that's a great
question.
Yeah, Laurel was a very, very good program. It helped us as legislators do our work and helped us research, and particularly in the area of research, it was very helpful. What happened was a few years back and over the course of the past couple of years, we ran into significant budget cuts, and that's one of the luxuries that members had in terms of the ability to go to a source and get information that unfortunately didn't make the cut. But I do think it provides good relevant information for members and stakeholders to understand what processes and research needs to be done. And it's unfortunate that made its way to the cutting room floor, so to speak. I'm concerned about whether or not we can bring it back right now or something that looks like it. I can say to you that each of the individual caucuses do have research capabilities, but not the same level of knowledge and expertise that organization had. But at the end of the day, given the very significant budget shortfall that we're facing, about $1.2 billion shortfall, it's going to be difficult to do a lot of things as we go forward. So while I'd like to see it come back, I don't know whether or not that's going to happen this particular budget year. But it's certainly one of those things that we keep sort of on the list of things that we'd like to do as we go forward.
I'd just like to concur with Jim from personal experience. Laurel was an excellent resource, and it provided a lot of insight for legislators and staff. And it was a wonderful place where you go to get answers to questions. And they did excellent research that was heavily used by the legislature. Just to remind the callers, if you'd like to ask Senator Acosta a question, please press *3, and we'll get you on as soon as possible. Senator, we're going to go through to Denise in Penn Hills, and she has a question about the impact fee and the level of the impact fee. Denise, you're on live with Senator Acosta.
Good evening, Senator, and I have to echo the sentiments of the last caller because I, too, appreciate having the ability to be a participant in something that otherwise I would not have been. But my question is, you indicated that the shell industry is paying an impact fee, but they're not paying an extraction fee. How much of a percentage, the impact fee, are they actually paying, and exactly where is this money being channeled to? Because with the shell industry that is generating an awful lot of revenue, and with our school systems, both in Penn Hills, the city of Pittsburgh, et cetera, having these shortfalls, is any of the money being channeled towards education?
The answer to that direct question is no. The amount of money that the impact fee generates, it's about $225 million this year. I think it came out in April. So it's roughly about $225 million. A large part of that, however, makes its way back to the counties and the local municipalities that are currently doing where the Marcellus Shell activity is taking place. And it's limited to how much the municipalities are able to receive, but it's designed to provide those local governments with the resources that they need to deal with the impact, quite frankly, of the shell industry being there, whether it be the deterioration of their roads or other things along those lines, the quality of their streams and the like, all those type of things, those resources are used for. I agree it's not enough. I did not support the Act 13. I voted against it and spoke out very strongly against it on a couple of reasons. One, the fee wasn't high enough. It should have been anywhere from 5 to 6% in my view. The second thing was that the environmental controls that were in place were not sufficient, and the local zoning ordinance, which our Supreme Court just discussed. So those are the reasons why I voted no on it. But at the end of the day, it generates about $225 to $250 in that range, and that will continue to grow, but not to a great extent. Some of that money goes into grant programs that are distributed to environmental programs across the Commonwealth. So even if you have a county or a municipality that does not have any drilling, they are eligible to receive some grant funding through the Act 13 program, and folks can get information, or local government officials can get information of that on the Commonwealth Financing Authority's website. You just go to the Act 13 programs, and there's about six grant programs that are available. Specifically, one deals with putting some resources into things like stream restoration, trails, and things of that nature. So there's a nice environmental component to how those resources are driven out across the whole state of Pennsylvania, and I think that's an important aspect of it. But that's how much is taken in. That's about the equivalent of about 1.5% of an extraction tax. So if you were to say, what is the impact fee, I would say that it's about a 1.5% fee, roughly, trending downward.
Thank you for the question. Just to follow up, and so I can re-ask the full question for those folks that have just joined us. Expanding Medicaid to cover persons who make up 138% of the federal poverty line is under consideration, and considerable pressure is being applied on the governor to force his hand. Proponents say that more than 500,000 Pennsylvanians will receive health care, and the state will either save or generate $400 million in savings, and the 35,000 jobs may be created. The governor contends that Medicaid expansion is too costly, and helper persons should be covered through a premium support plan. He went and he asked the federal government to approve the private sector-based approach. So the question for the callers tonight is, which expansion method do you support? If you think we should embrace Medicaid expansion to cover individuals up to 138% of the federal poverty level, press 1 on your keypad. If you support Governor Corbett's private sector premium-based approach, press 2. And to remind all the callers that just joined us, if you have a question for Senator Costa, please press 3. We're going to go back to Walter in Wilkinsburg. He has a question about shale. Walter, you're on live with Senator Costa. Go ahead.
Okay, how you doing, Jay?
How you doing, buddy?
Oh, pretty good. The question I have, only very simple questions. One is, does the state have any jurisdiction over our cable rates?
I know that local governments are able to work with, they all have to have sort of franchise-type agreements with the cable companies, but my belief is that that is a federal, the FCC, I think, Federal Communication Commission, has jurisdiction and authorization and regulation over the cable industry.
Thank you for the question, Senator. We're going to go to Martha in Squirrel Hill, who has a question about early education and investments. Martha, you're on live with Senator Costa. Go ahead.
Thank you. I appreciate the opportunity, and you certainly have an amazing command of a variety of facts and issues, and this one is pretty easy. Do you think there's a good chance that the legislature and the governor will increase investments in early childhood education given the tough year we're facing?
I certainly hope we do, Marty. I think that's something that I think we need to do. As you know and others know, I've been a strong proponent in this, and as we go through this budget process, as we look to reduce spending, we are going to fight very, very hard to make sure that we don't make reductions in the areas you just referenced. I concur 100% with you on that. We have to try to at least maintain what the governor's put into the proposed budget and try to grow it if we can. It's going to be tough to grow what we already have there, but at the end of the day, we can't go backwards, and I'm fearful that that may happen, but we're going to fight against that.
Thank you for the question, Martha. Senator, we're going to go now to Rose Marie in Penn Hills, and there's a question about senior citizen and home repairs. Rose Marie, go ahead.
Thank you for taking my call, Senator Costa. My question is, I'm retired, and I am a senior citizen, and I wanted to know if there are any grants for senior citizens for home repairs. My furnace, I need a furnace replaced, and my roof, and I was just wondering if there are any grants.
I think that there are some programs. The most significant one that I come to mind that comes to mind is the LIHEAP program, where there's two components. There's assistance with respect to are behind on some of your payment of your bills, but there's also the crisis component, where it is if you do need a new furnace and other things along those lines, that you need, that there's some resources available. I would suggest that you do me a favor. Call my office tomorrow, my district office, 412-241-6690, and either ask for Terry or Elaine, and they will put you in touch with the folks at LIHEAP and give you a more definitive answer about whether or not there are any other programs available along those lines. I know that there are some home remediation type programs out there as well, through some of these programs that some of the utility companies provide as well. And so we'll try to put you in touch with all those folks along those lines. But call the office tomorrow, 412-241-6690, and we'll get you in the right direction.
Okay, thank you for the call. We're going to go to Ramel now. That's a question about second chance, and I know, Senator, you've been very involved with in the judiciary issue and on this issue through your past efforts on the Sentencing Commission. So, Ramel, go ahead. You're online with Senator Acosta.
Hi, Senator. How you doing?
I'm well, thanks. How about yourself?
I'm hanging in there. My name is Ramel Davis, and I'm calling concerned as I've been trying to get a real job to become a homeowner because I'm almost homeless because I can barely pay the rent because I'm a convicted felon of 20 years ago. And every time I get on a job interview, they tell me, no, you're a convicted felon. Where do I go from here?
Well, I think a couple of things that can be done. We've tried to implement legislation that would allow the opportunity to go and get your record expunged and to make it streamline that. Given the nature of the offense, if it's a nonviolent offense and it's not a felony and a misdemeanor right now, you can go after 5 years and make an attempt, of course, to get it expunged. If it's a different type of offense, it may be more problematic. I've supported legislation referred to as second chance legislation, along with my colleague, Senator Shirley Kitchen out of Philadelphia, but also Senator Tim Solovey has been very active in this issue as well. And I can tell you, folks come to our office on a regular basis. That have explained the same experience that you have. They, they've worked for the past 20, 25 years, maybe gone back to school and got an education, and now they're ready to enter the workforce, raise the family. Oftentimes it's single moms who've raised the family, and they're prohibited from finding suitable work, and it's frustrating. So we're trying to move legislation that will make it easier for folks like yourself and others to be able to gain entry into the workforce and to be able to get the loans and borrow the money you need to purchase a home and so forth.
Okay, thank you very much for the question. Senator, we're going to go to Michael now. He has a question about the minimum wage and the efforts to raise the minimum wage. Michael, go ahead. You're on live with Senator Acosta.
How are you today, Senator?
Well, Michael, how about yourself, pal?
Good. My question is, are you going to be involved in raising the minimum wage in Pennsylvania from $7.25 to $10.10, what the president is proposing?
Yes, we're working on that. I can't say that we're going to make it happen between now and June 30th, but our Senate Democratic Caucus, led by Senator Tartaglione, myself, and Senator Hughes, are all working towards trying to do a responsible increase along those lines. Whether it's $9, $10.10, remains to be seen what the level of the impact is, but it's been quite a long time since we've done it, and it's appropriate for us to take a look at it right now.
Okay, thank you very much for the call. Senator, we're going to go to Alan in Squirrel Hill. I know Alan has a question about the minimum wage, but he also has a question about medical marijuana, an issue that we're dealing with in the Senate currently. Alan, go ahead. You're live with Senator Acosta.
Thank you. Thank you. That was my question. What are your feelings about moving forward with legalizing medical marijuana?
I think that I support. I've been a longtime skeptic of the issue until I had the chance to meet some family members who are dealing with issues, primarily epilepsy. And watched the hearing testimony and watched videos and did a lot of research on the issue. And I, as a number of members have, and I will tell you that a number of members over the course of the past 3 or 4 months or so, I have been moved away from being skeptics into the position where they would support what needs to be done. The question is going to be to what degree what our plan would look like. The governor has talked recently about having a very narrow focus on individuals with epilepsy and significant seizure disorders. I don't know whether or not that's going to be pass muster. I think my colleague Senator Fumer and Senator Dalen Leach have introduced legislation that was more encompassing. Somewhere on that spectrum, we're going to find the right sweet spot to be able to do this, but I believe we need to do something along those lines. I think the case has been made very eloquently that we need to address it. The scientific research exists and is there, and I would support, if it came to a floor vote, I would be supportive along those lines.
Thank you very much for the call. Senator, now we're going to turn to the issue of infrastructure. As you know, we recently passed a transportation bill, and there's been a significant investment, and the Senate Democrats have been very active in trying to get additional investment in infrastructure as part of their PA works. And I know you've been very active in that. We're going to go to Stan in Forest Hills. It was a question about infrastructure investment. Stan, go ahead. You're live with Senator Costa.
Hello, Senator. Please address Pennsylvania's transportation infrastructure funding, such as for maintenance and repairs of bridges and roads, which are sorely needed to have attention. I understand that Pennsylvania has more deteriorated bridges than any other state in the union.
That's correct. The General Assembly recently, and the governor recently signed a very comprehensive transportation funding plan that does a number of things. One, it specifically addresses the deficient roads and bridges that we have in Pennsylvania. Roughly about a $2.5 billion program and funding stream that will make its way in a variety of areas. That'll be in 5 years. So it ramps up over the course of the next several years and culminates in $2.5 billion a year going forward. The large part of that money is going to go, I think, roughly, you know, almost $2 billion of it is going to go, a little less than $2 billion, is going to make its way into our roads and bridges. So that list of deficient bridges that you've talked about will be addressed. And it's a very lengthy list. We have a number of bridges that are closed, a number of bridges that are weight limited, and some that just simply need a lot of work. In the Pittsburgh area, a couple of the bridges that are going to get immediate attention, as the, for example, in Southside, in our district, the Birmingham Street Bridge is going to be one of the first ones on the list. We all know about what happened about 5 or 6 years ago when it sort of slid off the moorings there, and that's going to be addressed relatively quickly. But there are a number of other smaller bridges that are going to be addressed, as well as rehabilitating a lot of our roads, whether it be resurfacing, whether it be shoring up the roads, widening some of the berms and the things of that nature. A whole host of things are going to be done working with PennDOT. PennDOT in District 11, where we're at, has done an outstanding job, and Dan Cessna, the engineer there, and his folks have identified the most appropriate projects that need to be done very quickly. At the end of the day, that's a part of it. The other part of the issue relates to transportation funding, relates to mass transit. Significant dollars making their way back to Allegheny County and the transit agencies across the state to allow them to be able to continue to sustain themselves, reduce, at least keep fares from being increased, as well as maintaining and hopefully trying to increase bus routes along those lines. But we're also putting money into the rivers, into our waterfronts. There's money that's going to be for our trails. There's money that's going to be for the waterfront programs. There's money in this $2.5 billion for our airports. So there's a whole comprehensive approach to how we're funding it, transportation. It's money that's well spent. It's been about 17 years since we've increased. We've generated additional revenue for transportation, and it's going to be a good plan, a good, well-thought-out program along those lines.
Thank you, Stan. Thank you for the question. And as you know, transportation is a big issue, and we've dealt with that. And there's a number of needs in the Pittsburgh area, and the new transportation investment not only will address the transportation needs, but create jobs. Just to recap, relative to our poll question, we've been going through and asking folks if they support expanding Medicaid through expanding Medicaid to up to 138% of the poverty line, or do you support Governor Corbett's private sector approach? And we're closed on the voting on that. Just to let all those who have participated tonight know that 84% of the folks who participated in the call support the expansion of Medicaid through up to 138%. I know, Senator, that's your position. Mm-hmm. That's a very strong support among those who participated tonight. Senator, we're going to go back to the calls, and we're going to bring in Mary from Munhall, who has a question about property taxes and hospitals. Mary, go ahead. You're live with Senator Costa.
Hi, Senator Costa. How are you tonight?
I'm well, Mary. How are you doing tonight?
Okay. You'll probably recall me as Liz Morrissey back in the 70s. I was the one that fought to keep the Homestead Hospital on West Street. Okay, we did win, and we were able to keep the emergency room to 2000, and then everything moved out to Jefferson. Okay, well, as we know, living in Pittsburgh, UPMC has kind of taken over. And I just wondered, do they pay any real estate taxes? I know I had cut out an article a few months back where they hadn't been. And why do we not get that revenue, which would most certainly bring more money into Pittsburgh?
They, because they're public charities, the hospitals, the nonprofit side, they're charities, because they have a public mission that benefits the public, they do not pay property taxes. I would say, however, they're what I would call their for-profit side, and anywhere that they have anything that's going on that's for profit, they are required to provide and pay property taxes. For years, institutions like UPMC and many others, University of Pittsburgh and so many others, had paid for something called payment in lieu of taxes. And back in 1997 or so, that point in time, we used to have a lot of folks, a lot of entities paid the payment in lieu of taxes. We made changes, unfortunately, to the Public Charities Act that made it easier for those entities not to make those payments. And at the end of the day, we're now faced with declining revenue making its way to local governments because we made changes to the Purely Public Charity Act. They do make some payments along those lines. Like, for example, UPMC, to their credit, provides, I believe, up to anywhere from $7 to $10 million a year into the Pittsburgh Promise, the program that allows for scholarships to City of Pittsburgh students who graduate a Pittsburgh high school at a certain grade point average and make their way to college. They provide some scholarship funding along those lines. But they are one of the only – the number of pilot programs that exist has been diminished. I know in the City of Pittsburgh, Mayor Peduto has been working to try to – and we've been working with him to try to increase the number of dollars that the nonprofit community, universities, hospitals, schools, and the like participate. I know that my friend Senator Wayne Fontana is in the process, has already introduced and will be introducing again legislation that will go towards that end as well. So hopefully we'll be able to have some traction along those lines to try to generate more revenue, not just for the City of Pittsburgh, but also at local municipalities throughout the region that also deal with some of the shortfall of revenue because our nonprofits have been paying fewer and fewer dollars in payment in lieu of taxes.
Thank you very much for the call, Mary, and I know we only have a couple minutes left, so Senator Costa, you have some closing comments?
Yeah, I want to just say, thanks, folks, for participating in our telephone town hall meeting discussion tonight. I think it's a great way to reach out to folks, and if they're interested, they can stay on the line and ask us questions and listen to the conversation. They can express their opinions. I'm a big fan of doing town halls and the like, as many folks know, but sometimes this is a little bit easier way than it is to maybe get to a community library or to community school on Saturday morning or some evening. So I appreciate everyone who stayed on the line, who provided comments, and who asked us questions. If you have questions, you can feel free to call our district office at 412-241-6690. We're happy to answer any questions they might have or any assistance that you might need about anything I spoke about. Please feel free to ask for either Elaine or Terry in the Forest Hills office or Michelle up in Carrick, and we're here to serve you, and we appreciate very much you being a part of today's call. You can also get a lot of information in our website, www.senatorcosta.com. A lot of information there that also links you to a lot of other important information about state government and things that are going on in our community. So thank you all very, very much, and look forward to doing this again. It sounds like it was a success and people wanted to participate, and we will be doing this as we go forward. Thanks again.
Thank you, Senator, for participating, and all those who have called in this evening into Senator Jay Costa's Teleton Hall. You've been a great audience. Thank you for sharing your evening with us. Have a good evening.